In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, April 7th, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of the program today, we will dig into our HR Reinvented series, in particular, the results of the survey that you responded to. A number of you and your colleagues responded to our HR survey at federalnewsradio.com over the last several weeks, and we'll be poring over those responses today with Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller and Paul Rousen, Managing Director of World at Work. Paul, of course, because he is involved in HR issues both inside the federal government and in the private sector, will be able to compare some of the results from our HR survey with similar surveys that are done on people who work in the private sector, and that will be in hour number two of our program. Paul joined me in studio along with Jason to talk about the results of that survey. In hour number one, though, we are focused on cybersecurity, an issue that every agency is dealing with, the federal government dealing with as a whole, and Pat Clawson, Chairman and CEO of Lumention, also thinking about cybersecurity and writing about it on the Lumention blog. And Pat's my guest for the hour to talk about cybersecurity today. It's great to have you on the program, Pat. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Happy to do it. What is issue number one as you're thinking about cybersecurity, and in particular the way that the federal government deals with it or the individual agencies deal with it?
Well, that's a complicated question. We recently sponsored a survey that was done by the Claris Group, and we looked at a couple big issues at a high level. You know, what was the IT professional within our U.S. federal government infrastructure's view of cybersecurity? What was their view of risk in general? What was their view of compliance and how all of that touched it? And some of the biggest issues that we saw arising out of that survey would be, what is our preparedness or ability to deal with a big style attack that's leveraged or brought to us by some sort of a nation state or a terrorist organization? I think one of the most disturbing facts we found is only 6% of the respondents felt we were in an excellent position to deal with it. So 94% didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be a concern when we consider just how important all that stuff is to us.
I guess if you want to turn that on its head, though, only 7% said poor, so 93% think we're doing fair or better.
Yeah, and if you looked at it, there were, in the good category, we had 47%, and in the fair category, we had, you know, about 35%. So you get, you know, I guess the issue is, this is our national security. The electronic component of our national security is different than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. I mean, a foreign nation state or terrorist organization could seriously cripple us by shutting down airlines, by shutting down or affecting our military plans. And excellent is where I think we'd like to be,
mm-hmm.
protecting those things that are most critical to us. Not fair, not poor, not
yeah.
good, I guess, as well.
It says here, the survey included interviews with 201 federal government IT security decision makers and influencers who work in federal agencies and departments that deal with national security, such as defense, foreign policy, and homeland security, as well as civilian agencies. There has been some conversation among people who deal with cybersecurity that maybe that's part of the problem. Every agency has somebody who's tasked with cybersecurity, whether it's the chief information security officer or somebody else. We have Howard Schmidt, who we'll talk some more about, and someone that you're very familiar with, and we'll talk about that connection later on as well. But U.S. CERT has a role at DHS. The discussion about the National Security Agency being involved. There is a role for NIST. There are pieces of cybersecurity all over the government, and there are some people who are wondering if maybe that isn't part of the problem.
Yeah, very good point. I think a few years ago in the Bush administration, there was a launch of the CNCI, and I think the CNCI, which is Cybersecurity Initiative, is really kind of focused on dealing with all that fragmentation that exists between the different agencies. And I think one of their primary objectives was an attempt to actually unify the agency's fragmented approach to federal cybersecurity. And there was I think that budget was largely confidential or classified, but a lot of money was, at that time, had begun being put into solving some of those fragmentation issues. And I don't think we've accomplished what we ultimately would like to have accomplished yet, but there has been an effort to make that go away.
What do you think is the next step? We, as I said, we'll dig into the relationship and the situation with Howard Schmidt and what he's the job he's got ahead of him. Is the structure that's in place right now the desirable structure to get your next survey, whenever you commission that, to be more in the excellent range?
You know, when the respondents talked about how well we're doing in terms of cybersecurity, there was a sense that we've made progress. That's the good news. That there's been investments in technology, that we are moving the ball in the right direction at a federal level in terms of being prepared to deal with cyber attacks and having the technology to get us there. One of the things that we've seen, though, is an increase in compliance and regulatory hurdles that are imposed upon them, largely for good reasons. But there's still a very manual process associated with understanding where we sit relative to these regulations, and there's a general feeling that they don't have the tools to show compliance, to tie compliance to security, or the people to get that done. So I think there's some positive steps on the federal level in terms of getting ourselves to a better security posture, and hopefully we see that 6% rise fairly dramatically.
You're talking about the checklist mentality that a lot of CIOs and CISOs talk to me about, both on the record and off the record, about the problem, the way they see it, is that they spend time on compliance and don't necessarily have a sense at the end of the compliance list checking that they're really much more secure than they were than when they started.
True. Very true. One of the interesting, we had a stat that came out of the survey. It said how much of your time is spent working on tasks related to the Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative, or CNCI. And out of the respondents, 40-some-odd percent said that they spend less than 10% focused on that initiative right now.
Mm-hmm. What I thought was even more interesting than that, something we had on the same page here, and that is that only 6% of respondents rate the federal government's overall ability excellent. You talked about that. But then the issue that three-quarters are expecting a cyber attack in the next, say the possibility is high for a cyber attack in the next year. I mean, that's like right around the corner. That's now.
Yeah. And there's some further stats that the respondents are telling us that they've already experienced, 22% have already experienced attacks that they believe came from terrorist organizations or foreign nations. So 23% of our agencies are already responding to that. Some like 59% said that they've been impacted, pretty seriously by viruses and malware intrusions and a whole list of other things. So we've got, rogue nation style attacks on us, and publicly being admitted to at least 22% of the time. That's a big number.
Let's talk about the nature of those attacks, because I think that's part of this, that's texture here that I don't know that we get into a whole lot. We talk about the more amorphous aspects of cyber attacks, and the bad guys want to get in our networks, and on and on and on. What are they doing once they're getting in the networks? What kind of stuff are they going after, and what exactly is being compromised, and in what ways?
So that question can take on a couple different kind of interesting angles. One is, if you look at it at the federal level, and that's clearly the audience here today, several things are happening here. We're putting new names on it, things like advanced persistent threat. But really what we've got are foreign nations trying to understand how we react to certain situations. They're preparing themselves and to better understand how this country intends to react in terms of an attack. They're also mining data. They want critical information about our defense plans, troop deployments, military weaponry. They want to understand our power grids better, our emergency response plans, all kinds of data. I mean, that data today, and the interesting thing that I think all readers and listeners should understand, is that data in this century is a currency. And their ability to get and understand that data and mine it over a period of time makes them much more capable of dealing with us if we're ever on a war footing.
Now, as we try to figure out the nature of these penetrations and the idea that Yeah, it sounds to me the way you're describing it, we're still in a defensive posture. And the conversation has been going on for a couple of years now, not just how do we defend against these, but how do we turn to an offensive posture? Looking at some of these numbers and looking at some of these responses, no matter what some of the people who are out in front are saying about the possibility of that, doesn't sound like most of the people that were hit on this survey are really positive or feeling good about the possibility of that being able to happen.
In terms of being able to leverage some sort of an offensive campaign?
Well, at least to get out of the posture of having to be waiting for something to happen before you can try to do something about it. By, I guess by offensive, I don't mean that we're going out and pinging other people's networks, but at least trying to prevent some of these attacks or defend against some of them before they happen instead of sitting back and waiting for somebody to try to intrude onto the networks.
So that's an interesting point, Francis. I think one of the things that we have been trained as IT security or IT operations style professionals is that through the technology that we've been deploying for the last 10 odd years, it's been very reactive technologies, technologies that have been designed to say, okay, here's a problem or a virus or a form of malware, and then we create signatures to protect ourselves against that. We have different behavioral-based technologies on our networks to alarm us if odd behavior starts to take place, and then we respond. So by nature, we've been very reactive, and our technologies have been built to be very reactive. I think that this next year and the year after are really going to be some big years in terms of technology evolution, things like intelligent whitelisting, concepts of being proactive with regards to your security instead of being reactive. There are going to be some very interesting technologies that I think allow us to put ourselves in a much better position instead of sitting there waiting for something to happen and then deciding how to deal with it, putting ourselves in a much more positive environment with regard to what we know to be safe and allowed to run and not accepting anything outside of that arena.
Pat Clawson is Chairman and CEO of Lumention, my guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More cybersecurity talk, including some potential low-hanging fruit for your agency. We'll talk about that when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trosavin, and WTS, Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
Federal IT and security managers increasingly must rely on integrated tools and techniques designed to minimize damage and protect their most valuable information assets with dynamic defense architectures. This environment requires routine decision-making to balance introduction of new technology with ongoing mandates for information assurance. Register today for the Integrated Threat Detection and Defense webinar, April 28th at 2 p.m., and plan to join this detailed overview of several traditional protection and computing strategies presented by seasoned security experts who will help you update your thinking about content security and data privacy, malware detection and prevention attack, and intrusion prevention. Go to digitalgovernment.com/events/webinars and select Identity Threat and Detection Defense. That's digitalgovernment.com/events/webinars and select Identity Threat and Detection Defense to learn more and to register today. Presented by Cisco.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. We continue our week-long series, HR Reinvented. This afternoon, Professor David Lewis. He offers insights about how government recruits, and he says feds can do better, and a remarkable initiative that seeks to tap the wisdom of crowds for government procurement. We'll talk to the team behind GSA's Better Buy Project. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorbeck and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Pat Clawson. He's the chairman and CEO of Lumention, and we're talking about cybersecurity. Agencies, of course, consumed with cybersecurity, and people all over the government are dealing with it. When we come later on in the hour, as I mentioned before, Pat, I want to talk about Howard Schmidt and your knowledge of him and the situation that he finds himself in as the cybersecurity coordinator. But we spend a lot of time focusing on the things that the agencies need to do and issues that they're having. And of course, anytime there's a data breach or something like that, we hear a whole lot about it. Are the agencies getting the basics right? And do they think that they're getting the basics right?
Yeah, I think there's a general sense. A couple of the survey questions asked these folks at two different levels, those that were involved in national security and the IT professionals that were not involved in national security elements. And both of them, somewhere between 60 and 70% on either side, said that, yeah, they feel like they're getting it right and they're making major steps forward in terms of doing a better job at IT security and infrastructure in general.
Mm-hmm.
They also have indicated that, you know, that certain technologies that they've been able to get the funding to deploy to help them be more successful. And a lot of those are, and they continue to make investments here, things like firewalls and the antivirus, anti-malware technologies, vulnerability assessment. And then one of the real growers right now that they're trying to make headway in is the IT governance, risk, and compliance. And really what that's about is, When they're there to prove compliance because they're required by mandates to do so, and the FTCC is one or FISMA might be another, today they're doing that very manually. And they're doing a good job of that. It's expensive to do manually. It takes a lot of their general IT and security resources away from their day-to-day jobs. And that's one of those things, the automation of that technology that's on the grow with them as well. But they are doing a great job in many areas.
One of the things I want to get into when we come back, we only have about a minute left in this segment, but I want to talk a little bit about cloud computing. That showed up a couple of times in the survey, references to cloud computing, but there's this ongoing discussion when it comes to the cloud where it seems like a lot of agencies are approaching it as a tug of war in that either we can go into the cloud or we can be secure, and it strikes me that there's got to be some kind of a balance there if cloud is going to deploy as widely as Mr. Kundra and Mr. Chopra would like to see it deploy, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, there is a whole conversation around cloud and as one of those things that it's going to be making itself more and more relevant within our government networks and corporate networks. And how do you deal with it? How do you keep yourself safe and secure? And that moves right into the whole social media, virtualization, open source software conversation.
All right. Well, we can get into some of those conversations when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Pat Clawson, the chairman and CEO of Lumention, and we'll be back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment. I want to remind you, in hour number two today, Paul Rousen, managing director of World at Work, joins us to analyze the results of our Federal News Radio HR survey, part of our HR Reinvented series, and you can learn more about that at federalnewsradio.com, right on the homepage. We'll be back in a moment.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, is the home of the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10, Tom and Jane navigate the world of the RFIs, RFPs, circulars, executive orders, and regulations for you, the federal manager and contractor, and deliver news, perspective, and analysis in plain language to make your agency and company more efficient. Tom and Jane speak to newsmakers and analysts live to get to the details on the latest mission-critical news and information. The Federal Drive is federal news from the inside up. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris, weekday mornings from 6 to 10, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Now that health care reform is law, the hard work begins. Experts with the health care practice at Levitt Partners say there's no part of government the reform won't affect. The delivery of health care, structure of the system, the role of government organizing the system, all taking priority at federal agencies. Think of Health and Human Services as the hub to really clarify and implement the functions of the bill. More on that next week. I'm Amy Morris.
With the rates for the federal long-term care program increasing by as much as 25%, there's never been a better time to consider your options. WAPA offers long-term care insurance from several highly rated carriers. These plans offer multiple premium discounts, and certain plans even allows couples to share benefits, which increases flexibility and saves on premium costs. For a personal quote, call 1-800.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Become a citizen of Natstown and make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. Get your writ on and watch the Nats battle the Brewers April 16th, 17th, and 18th. There isn't a better way to celebrate the weekend. Friday, Jackie Robinson Day. Friday and Saturday, Miller Light Party Night. Sunday, Family Fun Day. With pregame autographs and postgame, kids run the bases. Spend less, get more, go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WAPA.
Now that health care reform is law, the hard work begins. Experts with the health care practice at Levitt Partners say there's no part of government the reform won't affect. The delivery of health care, structure of the system, the role of government organizing the system, all taking priority at federal agencies. Think of Health and Human Services as the hub to really clarify and implement the functions of the bill. More on that next week. I'm Amy Morris.
With the rates for the federal long-term care program increasing by as much as 25%, there's never been a better time to consider your options. WAPA offers long-term care insurance from several highly rated carriers. These plans offer multiple premium discounts, and certain plans even allows couples to share benefits, which increases flexibility and saves on premium costs. For a personal quote, call 1-800-243-5569 or visit waepaltc.org. That's 1-800-243-5569 or waepaltc.org.
Going to AA. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Alcoholics Anonymous can work against alcoholism, and a researcher says attending AA meetings can also help to reduce depressive symptoms, which he says are common among people with alcoholism. John Kelly of Massachusetts General Hospital looked at data on more than 1,700 people.
Some people were more depressed than others at intake, but when you partial that out and you control for that, you find that the more meetings you attend, the less depressed you were.
Kelly says it's another thing that can make AA valuable. He believes AA's fellowship may lift people's mood, and he says something about following AA's 12 steps may have an effect. He says staying sober can help because alcoholism can raise depression. The study in the journal Addiction was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
For those dedicated to public service, meeting the growing expectations of the American people represents a challenge, but with Smart Project, People, and Performance Management, we can make the government more efficient. Hosts the Performance Institute, Federal News Radio, Federal Managers Association, GovLoop, IBM, and Young Government Leaders present the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit, May 10th through 12th at the Crystal City Hilton. Learn how leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce drive results. Register today at governmentperformance.org.
While you're at work, decisions are being made about how you do your job, now and in the future. What sort of new regulations will dictate how your agency fulfills its mission? Listen every weekday afternoon from 3 until 7 for the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris. They bring you the latest news and explain how it will impact your world. Chris and Amy ask the questions you would ask. The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Pat Clawson. He is the chairman and CEO of Lumention. Your actual president might be a little disappointed to hear that I just changed your job title on you, Pat, so I apologize.
Maybe he got the top role. He might be happy.
Well, you never know. I guess it all depends on what's in the envelope every 2 weeks, right? At any rate, I appreciate your input on the Federal Cybersecurity Outlook for 2010 survey, and we will post that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. There'll be a link there to that on the Lumention site so people can read that anytime you want. What I wanted to talk about now for a little bit, if we can, is in particular some of the things that you've written on the Lumention blog called Optimal Security. You attack some of the things that we also talk about on Federal News Radio fairly regularly, and wanted to see if we could just kind of go back and forth about some of these posts. Back on February 8th, you posted one titled, Now Playing Cybersecurity, the Broken Record. And you write, sensitive information is stolen daily from both government and private sector networks. Do you think that people understand, and by people, I don't just mean our audience in the federal government, but I mean people more broadly, understand the difficulty that private sector companies face when it comes to having things stolen? I think most people get the idea that we don't want foreign governments to break in to DOD networks and steal the list of requirements or the plans for certain kinds of technologies that are used in military operations. I think that's a no-brainer for a lot of people. I don't think that as many people understand that there are just as many or maybe more threats against private sector networks that the government doesn't have any control over but still impact the way that the country operates and the way the economy prospers.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I'm kind of passionate about this, and I try to blog about it on several different levels. But the first thing we need to understand as a nation and try to get the whole population, everybody, to understand is that the data that we have in our private businesses is critical to us at many levels. At one level, you've got critical infrastructure companies, you know, whether it's railroads and other forms of transportation, mail delivery, energy, you name it. These are elements of our critical infrastructure that would come under attack if we were ever in another large-scale war. They're going to try and shut our critical infrastructure down. And one thing we don't, I think, fully appreciate is that our biggest adversaries around the world, those critical infrastructure components are state-owned. They're not privatized like ours are. So how is it that we can get the critical infrastructure components that are not federally owned, but incredibly important to our ability to operate and run on a daily basis, to wage war if need be, but just to live? How do we get them to be more secure? Do we really understand that they are at risk? I think that's one issue. On the other side of it, you have just a general business issue. These are sensitive times. We care about jobs. We care about how our children are going to be employed in the future. You know, we've driven the global economy for 100 to 150 years. We've been the key innovators around the world, and this has been the country that those innovations have been launched from, which has created jobs. Now, we have a real attack on our intellectual property that's being developed in this country by American businesses. We have to make sure that we, as business owners, runners, managers, anybody on an assembly line anywhere in this country, we need to make sure that we're protecting that intellectual property so that we get to benefit from those next-generation technologies by creating those jobs here in this country. And I've heard a lot of stats, some from the national security environment and some from the private environment, about how quickly the data that's on our networks is being mined and taken overseas for some lower cost environment to leverage it and build it leaner, meaner, and faster than we're capable of here. I think that's a real risk to us as a nation. We need to be able to maintain control and be the first generation developers of that next great technology. And where I think we're broken And the analogy I'll use is this, is if you understand, when I was a kid, we had a great campaign to educate all of us about the threats of nuclear war. I remember crawling under my desk in elementary school, and we were all very, very prepared for something that never happened, fortunately. But we aren't really doing a good job of communicating to our national population the importance of data security in terms of not just protecting the military secrets, as you mentioned perfectly, but also those other critical infrastructure components, and just in general, the intellectual property that we work so hard to build that will create our next generation jobs and keep us a global leader. I think the population needs to be able to understand that, and we need to do a better job of helping them understand it.
Now, President Obama and Howard Schmidt and every other administration official that's gone out and talked about cybersecurity is very careful to explicitly say, we know, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, we know that X percent, and usually the number is somewhere in the 80s, percent of our infrastructure in this country is owned by the private sector, and so we're interested in forming public-private partnerships and so on. And they're saying essentially the same thing that you're saying, recognizing we don't have control over this, and we can't necessarily just decide today we're going to start regulating it X. But what are the, where is that balance between what you talked about in other countries, which at least when it comes to cybersecurity is desirable? Certainly we've seen instances where when it comes to free speech and so on, it's not desirable. But some level of control is desirable. Too much is not. And where do you think that line is somewhere in between?
Whoa, the tricky line. this is the
solve
challenge.
Solve this and you win a prize.
Right, if you got the right answer, if you can figure it out. So from my perspective, it's this. You've got what controls our critical infrastructure outside of that that's federally owned are corporations. And these corporations are public companies, generally speaking. And we have a whole bunch of regulations and rules. This is who we are. We are a competition-driven free market environment with publicly held companies. And yet we can't force them to share their data. As a matter of fact, a lot of what we would like to know about what's happening to our critical infrastructure companies could get their management teams and the businesses themselves sued by shareholders if that information were to be disseminated. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be some form of a bridge. And I think at a high level, the American public needs to understand that today we don't holistically understand the threat or the nature of the threat that we're facing as a country across all of our critical infrastructure, because it is privatized, or it's over there on the public company side of the world. So at some level, we need to be able to create a bridge that allows corporations to share their threat data on a real-time basis with federal government in a way that doesn't violate any of our great business principles that make us unique and strong and powerful, but at the same time, allow us to, for the first time ever, really to understand the cyber threat that we face as a nation, not as a federal government and not as individual businesses, but as a collective critical infrastructural component. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and that's a great place for us to pause and pick up the conversation when we come back at the point of, okay, let's say we take you at your word and we move forward there. Who does it? And we'll talk about that when we come back with Pat Clawson of Lumention on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology, at Kaiser Permanente, we've found some better uses, like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments. Not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the Internet was intended? Maybe. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Are you accountable for improving efficiency and productivity? Then the 2010 DoD Service-Oriented Architecture Symposium is for you. Learn about SOA best practices and discipline from baseball's Ironman Cal Ripken, Union Pacific CIO Lyndon Tennyson, apprentice winner Kelly Perdue, DoD Assistant CIO David Wennergren, DoD Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer Beth McGrath, and many others. Be at the Crystal City Sheraton on April 21st and 22nd. Register at SOASymposium.com. That's SOASymposium.com.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris.
NASA's Chris Kemp, the CIO who leads the Nebula project.
I'm really impressed with how fast the government's moving on this one. We've seen a lot of encouragement from OMB surrounding doing pilots, taking particular applications and moving them into the cloud. I think every agency has different problems to solve and will devise different mixes of hybrid or privately hosted and publicly hosted cloud services.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive.
Hi, this is Brendan Morrison from the Southeast Division champion Washington Capitals, and you're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, helps you stay informed of the latest government mandates, IT innovations, and management trends. Weekday mornings, listen to The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris from 6 to 10. Tom and Jane have 20 years of combined experience in the federal market. They talk to principals, thought leaders, and game changers, and provide the analysis and perspective you need to make the right decisions for your agency and business. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris, only on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for listening today. My guest is Pat Clausen. He's the chairman and CEO of Lumention, and we're talking about cybersecurity issues in the federal government. And Pat, in the last segment, we were talking about the private-public partnership that the administration's talked about, and the issues about educating people and getting not a regulatory framework in place, but just kind of a bank of knowledge and information exchange. I'm curious to know, we've talked a little bit about Howard Schmidt. We've mentioned his name a number of times, and you're familiar with him at both a personal and professional level.
Correct. Yeah. Howard at one stage was a board member of this company.
And so you're well aware of his abilities and talents and so on. And I've not heard one person since he took that job say that he is anything except eminently qualified, tremendously knowledgeable, of a high level of integrity. And yet there are still questions about whether the job, not the person, whether the job is the right job to be able to do the kind of thing that you and I were talking about in the last segment. Do you think that whoever the person is who has the role of cyber coordinator is the person to do those kinds of things, to be that connection between all the agencies and the private sector, and even within the private sector talking to itself and talking amongst itself? Is that the person, or is that the job description there, or do we need somebody else on cyber, or do we need to kind of tidy up some of the various jobs that we have now? How do you envision that being successful?
You know, great question, Francis. And first, I'd like to echo your comments. Howard is the consummate professional, and he knows this, you know, this industry, this space, and the issues that we face as well or better than anybody else. But universally, I think the question has been about that role. Does the role have the teeth? Has he been empowered with enough authority, with enough budget, with enough policy creating capability to really take us a step forward? Over the last 6 months or so, I've heard a lot of the same comments all of a sudden being resurfaced, which is in some respects very good news, about issues that we've been talking about for 10 years. I've heard, you know, the cyber Pearl Harbor, which we talked about 10 years ago. I've heard, you know, a whole bunch of interesting conversations. So one element, the good news is people are talking, and Howard is absolutely a person that can move us forward. I would just encourage the president and those around him to get the handcuffs off him and allow him to be able to put things in motion. And some of those first things may be what he's capable of doing under the auspices of the role right now, which would be education. Get the American public to understand it is all of our job to protect the data. I mean, that in itself is a monumental task that is a big step forward if we all get just how important this stuff is. And then if we can, and if he can be the owner of that bridge between private and public, that also would be great. I think some other people that weigh into that are General Alexander. And, you know, I think it's his proposed new role, you know, in the cybersecurity side of things. So there's several people who get involved in this. But ultimately, the American public needs to understand, and that kind of helps us understand who might best own this, is that data and cyber are almost a fifth arm of the military. You know, it is a whole new branch of the military, and it's a whole new concentration in terms of how wars will be fought, you know, on the military level. So that's a whole other branch we could run down at some stage.
Yeah, and I'd like to do that. I'm wondering, though, while we're on this subject, when it comes to the public-private relationship, at what point will it be reasonable or appropriate, if it ever comes to this, for somebody in the public sector, the Howard Schmidts of the world or somebody else, to say, hey, private sector, you're not getting with the program here, and I'm not sure that you understand the nature of what we understand, and maybe have to hit people over the head and drag them along.
Well, part of that can be accomplished through policy. I mean, the real challenge is ultimately this is who we are as a nation. And there's sometimes a breakdown between those people on the federal government side and those people running, you know, public corporations, because the federal government side have never really run or managed, not in all examples, but in many cases haven't really run and managed and been subject to the rules and regulations of running a public company. So there is that we don't understand each other, speaking English but completely a different dialect. So a guy like Howard has the ability and the business knowledge to try and find the ways to reach out and engage corporations that touch critical infrastructure, to find out a path that would allow that communication to be able to be passed back and forth in a real-time way so we understand what's happening when we're seeing escalations of certain types of attacks in certain areas, and are they consistent between the critical infrastructure components that are held in, you know, by the you know, publicly traded companies and those that are handled on the public side. I think you can build that bridge. Some of it may be regulatory, but you got to be careful, because you demand that data might put that public company in a position of being sued. But I do believe that there is a way to bridge that gap.
Pat Clausen's chairman and CEO of Lumentum, my guest for the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and we're talking about solutions for cybersecurity challenges. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Energy says an expansion of the production of cellulosic biofuels can help to meet energy production and greenhouse gas goals. The department's Section 942 program supports the production of cellulosic biofuels by providing payments on a per-gallon basis through a reverse auction process. Members of the biotechnology industry group Bio point to a new report they say shows advanced biofuels are key to creating new jobs and revitalizing the U.S. economy. The report says the development of the industry could produce more than $140 billion in economic growth by the year 2030, including the direct creation of as many as 29,000 jobs by the year 2012, while reducing U.S. petroleum imports by about $5.5 billion by the same year and by nearly $70 billion by the year 2022.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
More than 1,200 industry and government employees have graduated from the CIO University since 2000. Monica Fitzgerald is the director of the university.
You're not going to see a position description today that says, in order to apply for this particular job, you need to have this federal CIO University certificate. That being said, when people do see it who are actively hiring and they're in the federal government themselves, the idea is that, oh, I know what that means. I know that you're grounded in these certain competencies. I know that you really learned these things very well.
Data is exploding in growth, usage, and retention. Count on it. And count on Vion to manage your organization through that change. Vion's file service solutions allow you to manage all platforms with an integrated management approach. This enables you to consolidate, protect, search, and archive unstructured data. With powerful technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion will help you regain control of your IT environment. To learn more about Vion's file services, visit Vion.com. That's Vion.com. Gain the tools and knowledge you need to lead reform for mission performance at ERMCO 2010. The General Service Administration's ERMCO is government's CXO conference exclusively by and for government executives and managers. At ERMCO, you'll learn how government leaders are leading reform for mission performance and how you can, too. Plan now to attend ERMCO on April 11th through 14th, 2010 in beautiful Cambridge, Maryland. Take advantage of early bird registration rates and visit ermco.gov or call 202-237-0300.
News for the federal decision maker. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM WFED. Your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and thank you for listening to my conversation this hour with Pat Clawson, President and CEO of Lumention. And, Pat, during the break, we were talking a little bit back and forth about the whole issue with the National Security Agency. You mentioned in one of your blog posts about NSA, and we mentioned them earlier, and there are some folks that when they hear the name National Security Agency and being given authority on internal matters like cybersecurity, they get a little bit excited. And you made an interesting comment when it comes to General Alexander, who we also referenced this hour, with his whole appointment still being kind of in limbo, and what that means about our overall cybersecurity efforts.
Well, you know, great point. So, you know, the NSA is really one of our greatest brain trusts in terms of some of the most educated, bright minds, used to dealing with data and managing it and understanding it and translating it. So you've got this brain trust that at some stage, you know, or at some rate, needs to be leveraged. The question ultimately would be, is it a resource to an effort, or is it the spearhead of one of those efforts? And that kind of leads you into the whole General Alexander conversation. You know, I think end of last year, we thought that General Alexander would receive his appointment at the beginning of this year, that he would start, you know, on behalf of this country, cybersecurity initiative, which mm-hmm. gives us a bit more of an offensive and defensive approach. You know, I think that the people's concern about the NSA would be ill-founded. I think that's more of a myth. You got some really bright, talented, exceptionally patriotic people over there that want to do a great thing. And I think some of those people may wind up underneath General Alexander's organization if indeed that gets formalized here in the near future. But I think it's critical that we make that step, because that step is one that starts to acknowledge, as I think our biggest adversaries in the world have acknowledged, whether they're large countries or they're terrorists or they're small nation states, is that, you know, this whole data security, this whole cyber thing is a weapon, and it can be used as a weapon. I think even I remember one time in a meeting I had with some folks over at the Marine Corps. Marine Corps is very, very tight in the way they look at IT security technologies, and they look at it as a weapon, something that they can use, and, you know, both offensively and defensively, I think. So I think the acknowledgement of General Alexander and getting something running there is the first major step to us as a nation understanding and starting to deal with information technology as a weapon of the future. and one that we have to be prepared to defend ourselves against and leverage an offensive capacity if necessary.
I'm looking at a news story from last April, April of 2009, that is headlined, General Keith Alexander expected to be named cyber chief. And then I'm looking at a story online, just doing a quick Google search on General Keith Alexander, a story from the Air Force's website, American Forces Press Service, that says preparations for the formal establishment of U.S. Cyber Command are underway. And it goes on to quote General Alexander, saying nominated pending congressional approval. So this is another nomination that's kind of been languishing for a year or more in this case. What implications does that have for when things get up and running, the fact that at least preparations will have been made for years? Do you think that means that General Alexander might be able to walk in, just push a button, and we can see some fairly quick action, even if it's under the surface and not obvious to us?
Yeah, he's a superstar, but I'm not sure he'd be able to pull that off. I think the danger in that is, I mean, it's a year that's gone by now. And that sends a clear signal to our adversaries around the world that we just don't fully get how important this thing is yet. And if we did, we would be moving forward more aggressively. And I think, look, we're a big government, and those wheels turn slowly. Once he is finally anointed and approved by Congress, that cyber command is something that needs to get up, get running, and get moving. And I'm sure he's going to pull some of the best and brightest resources from different agencies to help him accomplish that task. But I don't think it's a flip on the light switch and get rolling. I think it's going to take him some time to get it done, and all the more reason to get moving on it.